Nisambulavinaka, you're listening to Dateline from RNZ Pacific. I'm Kuroi Hawkins. Coming up. Indonesian police have forcibly dispersed hundreds of protesting university students in Jayapura. Papua New Guinea's Prime Minister pays tribute to Bougainville's new and outgoing president in Buka. Also,
this will be President Tommy Ramangasau's last Independence Day as president.
Palau celebrates 26 years of independence, and an outspoken PNG archbishop retires after years fighting for the underdog in his community. Indonesian police have forcibly dispersed hundreds of West Papuan University students holding a demonstration in Jayapura. The students were peacefully protesting against the extension of the region's special autonomy status in the Indonesian-ruled provinces of Papua when things took a turn for the worse. Multiple videos filmed at the protests and posted online show protesters running for cover outside the university as the sound of gunshots ring out. In some of the videos, protesters are being set up on by armed police and bundled into the back of police trucks. It's the latest in a series of demonstrations against special autonomy around cities in Papua and elsewhere in Indonesia. Johnny Blades has been following the protests and joins me now. So what do we know so far, Johnny?
So this latest rally was at Jayapura's Cendrawasih University. Hundreds of students, you know, making a protest against Jakarta's plans for an extension of the special autonomy law, which has been in place in Papua for 19 years and is due to expire next year. Just the latest in a series of demonstrations. There were some big ones last week, including in Nabire, where about 200 people were arrested, and even in other cities in Indonesia like Manado. However, this one, like the others, was met by a heavy presence of police, in this case armed police, and there were shots fired. A police spokesman says they were warning shots. It certainly dispersed the crowd, as sending, you know, panicking students fleeing. But the police spokesman has denied a claim that some of the students were injured.
And this special autonomy, this is Indonesia's sort of way of trying to reach out and say to Papuans, look, you know, this is us recognizing your aspirations to self-govern, to manage your own affairs. What's the issue that Papuans have with it?
Yeah, well, it was initially given in 2001 as a response to increased demands by West Papuans for independence. However, it was quickly rejected by many Papuans as not having achieved what it was mandated to do in terms of empowering Papuans to be in charge of their own, you know, territory, their own affairs, and especially their economy. You know, well, that's a debate for another time as to how well it's worked in terms of economic development, because certainly a lot of development has taken place in Papua during that time. But the problem now is that with the special autonomy law to expire in 2021, the Papuans, many of them are saying that they're not being included in discussions about what should come next. I mean, many of them want independence. That's something that Jakarta, the members of Indonesia's government, don't want to even give thought to. They're sort of just being accused of bulldozing through this next successor document to special autonomy. It's just an extension of special autonomy. It hasn't been completed yet, but I guess the protests are a sign that Papuans, one, feel that they're not being included enough in discussions about what should happen to the political status of Papua, and two, again, as we've seen, like especially last year in those huge demonstrations about a year ago, that they are saying they want independence, or they want a legitimate self-determination process.
Johnny Blades reporting. Papua New Guinea's Prime Minister James Marape was in Bougainville on Tuesday to witness the swearing-in of the autonomous region's new president. Ismail Toroama, a former rebel militant commander, was elected as Bougainville's president last week. James Marape led a delegation of senior political and public service leaders, as well as heads of foreign missions, to PNG. The recent election opened the way for consultations of the outcome of Bougainville's non-binding independence referendum, in which an overwhelming majority voted for independence. As my colleague Don Wiseman told me, Mr. Marape was effusive in his praise of the new leader.
Well, the Prime Minister said, given Toroama's significant role in the reconciliations and peace building after the Civil War 20 years ago, he could think of no one better to lead Bougainville as the peace process enters a crucial stage. He said of Ismail Toroama that he was a signatory to the Bougainville Peace Agreement. He was instrumental in working with the late President, Joseph Kabui, and others in bringing a halt to the conflict. And he's led reconciliations and demonstrated his capacity for forgiveness. Mr. Marape went on to say the 2001 Bougainville Peace Agreement is an historical document. It requires that both governments consult on the outcome of the referendum that took place last year, put in place a final roadmap for an enduring peace. And Mr. Marape reaffirmed his government's commitment to the ongoing peace process.
And do we have a firm idea yet of what's going to happen in that process?
Well, the understanding is that once the new government is formally in place, which should happen by the end of next week, they will start working on a program for negotiations with a team from the PNG government. And they'll work through that. The initial plan, at least, was over the course of about a year, with the possibility that something will go to the PNG National Parliament for ratification before the PNG elections of 2022, so possibly by the end of 2021.
What else is the Papua New Guinea Prime Minister doing while he's in Bougainville?
He's visiting a couple of road systems that are being rebuilt on Bougainville, courtesy of moves by his government last year. One of the things about James Marape is that he's been very proactive at trying to improve the flow of funding to Bougainville. Lack of funding from Port Moresby was the bane of John Momus's time as president in Bougainville.
And did the Prime Minister make a mention of the outgoing president?
Yes, well, John Momus, of course, was president for 10 years, and in a way, that was only a small proportion of the time that he had spent involved in government for Bougainville and, in fact, for PNG. Mr. Marape said John Momus was a founding father of the nation, is the father of decentralisation. His contribution to PNG and his beloved Bougainville spanned more than 50 years. And Mr. Marape said he left an enduring legacy of peace and self-determination over the course of the last 10 years, in often challenging circumstances. He said President Momus never lost sight of his people or the obligations placed on him by them. He thanked President Momus for his leadership and wisdom over the years. He says he'll always be remembered as a leading proponent for peace and a man who was passionate about his people.
Don Wiseman reporting. Celebrations are underway in Palau in the lead-up to the country's 26th independence anniversary on Thursday. Palau gained its independence on the 1st of October in 1994 after 47 years as part of a UN Trust territory administered by the United States. As one of the Pacific's COVID-free countries, public events are being held throughout the week, and the country is even hosting visiting dignitaries from the neighbouring Micronesian states and territories. I spoke with our Palau correspondent, Bernadette Carrion, about the significance of this week's celebrations.
It's a big event because it also culminates into a lot of activities, and also including that this will be President Tommy Remangasaus Jr. Last Independence Day as president. He will retire by the end of 2020.
And he's done a lot of great work over his years. Some of the ocean work also is being celebrated with the independence celebrations, I understand. What's the new initiative?
Yes, Palau is also hosting the Our Ocean Conference. It is the first small island states or nation that is hosting a big international event like this. And also President Remangasaw is an advocate of ocean protection with the Palau National Marine Sanctuary and other ocean initiative, and so and climate change. And so with the Our Ocean Conference, it's supposed to be a big event, but because of COVID-19, the event will be done in hybrid. But with that comes along with multi-million infrastructure to get Palau ready to host the event. That is with the help of several nations from New Zealand, Australia, Japan, India, and many others by unveiling infrastructure that includes improvement of the Palau National Gym, and then the opening of a global village, also construction or improvements of some of the long-standing facilities in Palau. It was supposed to be the venue for the R-Ocean conference.
What are some of the local events and celebrations you mentioned that will be happening?
Because Palau is COVID-19 free, so we will have the usual fireworks, the usual events that lead up to the Independence Day. And also one activity is a face-to-face meeting with the Micronesian presidents from Nauru, Kiribati, RMI, and Palau. And I don't think the FSM leader will make it. I think he has to stay at home to govern the country. But the leaders from the four other countries are arriving today via Nauru Airlines for, I would say, probably a first Pacific diplomacy in-person meeting since the onset of the COVID-19.
Do we know anything about what's on the agenda for the Micronesian Leaders Summit?
The agenda will be, of course, the appointment of the Secretary General, as the Micronesian leaders are reaffirming the backing of their nominee for the Secretary General. And I believe they're going to fight for what they call the gentleman's agreement, and that the other Pacific leaders have agreed before that it's Micronesia's turn to provide the Secretary General for the Pacific Island Forum. They will also showcase how COVID-free nations are able to keep the virus at bay by doing this in-person meeting. They will also talk about the economy. They will also talk about debt stress and other issues that of common interest among the five nations.
Not an area I'm really well across, but all of the North Pacific, obviously, massive agreements with the US in varying levels with the compact. Is that something that's going to feature in the meetings, do you think?
I think it will also be discussed, especially among RMI and FSM. I think FSM and RMI will be renegotiating their compact a year ahead of Palau. So it will be an issue of shared interest, because right now, United States is very much wanting presence in the North Pacific. As you know, a few weeks ago, the U.S. Secretary of Defense was in Palau for a flying visit. And during that talks, U.S. has stressed that it wanted to conclude the renegotiation of the financial package of the compact with Palau this year, and also more visible presence in the North Pacific.
Bernadette Carrion in Coro in Palau. Francesco Panfilo, the Archbishop of Rabaul in Papua New Guinea's East New Britain, retired yesterday after years fighting for the underdog in his community. Archbishop Panfilo's retirement was delayed for 3 years after he began helping landowners in West Pomio in a battle with Malaysian logging and palm oil giant Ribunan Hijau. Their quest to renegotiate harsh lease agreement terms remains before the court as he departs, and he told Don Wiseman it's a regret.
Well, I on one side, I feel relieved, because, you know, at the moment, also my age is not, I am not getting any younger. But on the other hand, it would have been nice if we could have finished some of the issues which are still, they are on the pipeline, but they are still a bit not yet completely solved. Like, for example, the issue of the renegotiation of the agreement in Pomio, this palm oil issue is not yet completely solved, although there is a call from the National Court to be that the renegotiation should take place this year. 2020. So whether I am around or not, it will continue. My successor for sure will continue on this kind, on this issue, which, as I said, they are in the pipeline, they are almost finished. So on one side, I feel relieved, and on the other hand, I hope that this issue that I have fought for will really bring some benefits to the people on both aspects, not only just socially or politically, but also spiritually, because, you know, I am an archbishop, I am not a politician.
78-year-old Archbishop Panfilo, who is Italian, says he's not keen to go back to Italy in winter and is intending to settle in the Philippines. And that's Dateline Pacific from RNZ Pacific. Thank you, Tomas, for here to come.